You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Alan Young. The big day is coming up, November 5th, the general election. This year, of course, is the presidential race, but also much more. There are state and local contests, including propositions, school board elections, and the Sacramento mayor's race. With so many decisions to make, the ballot can feel a little overwhelming. CAP Radio is here to help with the ballot lingo. Insight host Vicky Gonzalez spoke with Kim Alexander with the California Voter Foundation and Mindy Romero with the USC Center for Inclusive Democracy for an Election Literacy 101.
Mindy and Kim, thank you for joining us and taking the time. It's a busy time of year for both of you.
Glad to be here.
Yeah.
Now is just, I think, a great time. I know I need one for a refresher on what people will be voting on because, of course, it's more than candidates. I want to start, though, with a little bit of background with both of your organizations. Kim, you're the founder of the current iteration of the California Voter Foundation. I mean, your organization, it just celebrated its 30-year anniversary. I'd like to go back to 1994. What was missing in election literacy at that time?
Well, we didn't have a way for voters to find answers to questions that maybe they thought were stupid questions, but really weren't stupid questions. And I first became aware of the internet in 1993. And 1994, I was like, oh, we should use this as a place to put up nonpartisan election information so people could find answers to their questions. And we built our first online voter guide in 1994, and we now have the 34th edition of it up on our website at calvoter.org.
Well, Mindy, I mean, you are the founder of the Center for Inclusive Democracy, which is at USC. You're based in Sacramento. What inspired this?
Oh, goodness. Well, we've been around for a while now, I think about 14 years or so. Really, it was because from a research perspective, I saw a quite significant gap in the data that was available not only to researchers, but also to the general public, to advocates, to policymakers, to use in whatever ways people thought made sense for them, of course, because we're nonpartisan, particularly research that was focused in some way on understanding the disparities in participation. So just filling a gap that I saw was there and still doing that today.
Yeah, I mean, you're part of an academia setting. I mean, you could have studied a lot of things. Why were you passionate when it came to elections and election literacy and the disparities within it?
Yeah, well, you know, that for a lot of people, right, it goes back to when you're a kid, at least for me, it did. When I was a pretty young, I didn't know anything about politics, didn't know anything about voting, but I could look around in my community and the communities nearby, and I saw a lot of things that didn't look so good. I saw a lot of disparities, you know, unemployment rates, quality of schools, potholes, you know, food deserts, all those sorts of things. And I could see there were differences in people's lives, quality of lives, at least from what I could see on the surface, right? There were more challenges, let's put it that way, right? And I saw other places and other communities where there were fewer challenges. And I wondered why that was. And I soon realized that the policy-making places, right, the places where decisions are made at a local level, so like a city council, board of supervisors, the communities where you thought would have the larger voice because they needed to have a larger voice, because they needed to ask for more representation, more service, right, more needs being met, those are the communities that actually have the smallest voice, right? They weren't coming to the city councils. They weren't being asked or engaged with. And then ultimately, I learned that voting, right? There are huge disparities in turnout by race, ethnicity, age, income, and communities that were having greater challenges by all the measures that I mentioned and more were the ones typically having much lower turnout. And so that just really stayed with me. And as I got older, I wanted to learn why. And then I studied it and kind of in my gut, I still think of that, you know, that question of why people don't have as much representation, why there are disparities, and wanting to inform and understand that better. And ultimately, hopefully, my work helps impact positively those barriers.
Yeah, I mean, the more engaged we all are, the better we all are off. But of course, there's barriers and challenges when it comes to engagement, when it comes to understanding a ballot from page one to the last page. It can be incredibly overwhelming. Kim, I want to ask you a similar question because, you know, you noticed a need 30 years ago, which led to you founding this nonpartisan nonprofit. What were your life experiences before that allowed you to see that gap and wanting to fill that gap?
I grew up in a family where my dad ran for city council when I was 7 years old. So I had elections in my life my whole time growing up. And I was voting for maybe the second or third time in my life in my early 20s on Board of Equalization was one of the statewide offices I was asked to vote on. And I had no idea what the Board of Equalization did, how I was supposed to evaluate the people who were running for this position. And my first thought was, I guess I'm stupid and everybody else knows what's going on. And then I was like, wait a minute. I have a degree in higher education. I work at Common Cause. I'm literally paid to be informed, like for a living. It's my job to be informed. I read the newspaper every day. My family was engaged. I'm like, if I don't know what I'm doing when I vote, what are the chances that anybody else really knows? And so that's when I began to think about how we could fill this information gap. And, you know, one of the things I've come to appreciate, Vicky, is that, and this goes back to what Mindy was saying, we have this shrinking electorate and campaigns are the ones that decide who gets informed, right? We live in a political system where we rely on political campaigns and parties to do what passes for voter education. And it's not sufficient. And, you know, they have a privately financed system. They get to decide how people get informed, and more importantly, who gets informed. And if you're not already voting, they're not talking to you. And so you just see this self-fulfilling prophecy, you know, growing year after year, which is, you know, the data that Mindy is able to capture. So if we're going to arrest that and change it, we have to augment the universe of voter information out there. And the internet is a great way to do that. And, you know, there was a time when we started back in the 90s, there was no Secretary of State website. There were no county election websites. There was no CAP Radio website or voter guide. Now all of that stuff is out there. There are so many great resources on the internet, and we get to stitch it all together for people through our voter guide. Of course, there's a lot of unreliable information out there, so we also need to teach voters media literacy. But I do think that from a voter's perspective, it's the landscape is better. At least there are cues you can look for. We can follow the money. We can look at endorsements. There are a lot of shortcuts voters can use to make informed choices. And we are California voters. We are 1 in 8 voters in the country. We are the 5th largest economy in the world. And what we do through our ballot has global ramifications, the decisions that we make as voters. So, you know, it's not nothing. This is a lot of power that we wield as California voters, and I want to make sure people use it wisely.
I mean, you're talking about a lot of strides mm-hmm. that have been made over the last 30 years. Both of you have been in this for quite some time, and you're part of that positive change. But even for myself, I know I
need And we both started when we were babies. We were babies.
Yes, when you're babies, really of course. Child prodigies. But I know for myself, I feel like I'm pretty engaged, but I know I need a refresher like every 2 years, whether it's a midterm, you know, or a presidential election. And not just so much the candidates, of course, but all the others of Board of Equalization, right? Propositions, measures. Why do you think it isn't more ingrained in voters? Because I don't think I'm alone in needing this kind of refresher every couple years. Mindy?
You're definitely not alone, right? I think we all do. And so for somebody that is more disconnected or from the political process in general, it can be that much more difficult, right? So why is it hard? And I think for a lot of people, the electoral political process in and of itself isn't necessarily highly salient. They struggle to see why it matters to their lives, how it actually can have an emphasis on positive impact on their lives. Some people feel disconnected, but they're still part of it. And others feel disconnected and they stay out of it, right? Or they kind of come intermittently when they feel like there's something that does matter for them. And a lot of people that don't get that outreach because of that inequitable outreach landscape that we have, because candidates and campaigns who do the bulk, I agree with Kim, absolutely, the bulk of outreach are only outreaching to some voters and not others. And if it's a non-competitive district, often very little outreach, right? It depends. So when people want to do the outreach on their own, maybe, and say, well, should I check out this election? Maybe I'll check out these candidates. What's going on with these ballot propositions? They can have a hard time getting the information that they feel is trustworthy, sincere, complete, or they're just confused. Ballot propositions, right, can be very confusing, all the legal language. And sometimes they just step out not to participate because they don't actually want to make a mistake. Or they vote on their ballot, but they've only voted on a few things and they skip things like ballot propositions, right? Or at least some. So I think it's a information gap. There's a motivation gap, but not that people don't care. It's a motivation to kind of feel why does the political process, right? Me participating actually make a difference. And sometimes people don't want to make a wrong choice or a bad choice when they're not actually fully convinced right, that their vote matters.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. And if you're just joining us, we're talking with Kim Alexander with the California Voter Foundation and Mindy Romero with the Center for Inclusive Democracy. And we're talking about Election Literacy 101 as we round the corner to the general election. Okay, so let's just get into an Election Day 101. Propositions. Okay, Mindy, you talked about propositions. What are they? What are they meant to accomplish?
You know, at their core, they're the ability of the public to have a say in lawmaking. This time around, we have 10. We've had longer ballots. And that's, you know, sometimes part of the confusion aspect, right? When you have so many. We have 5 that were put on by the state legislature, 5 that are on the ballot because of citizen signatures that were gathered. And I'm going to let Kim, if she wants to jump in.
Yeah, I mean, Kim, when it comes to propositions, I know for myself, sometimes a proposition, it can feel like deja vu. Like, I'm like, didn't we vote on this in the past? Or it kind of reminds me of a proposition in the past, Prop 36, which would increase penalties for certain drug and theft crimes. This is essentially changing or rolling back parts of a previous proposition, Prop 47, from a decade ago in 2014. Other propositions perhaps maybe add more funding for a project. If you're a voter and you kind of have this feeling of deja vu, is there a way to read up on the history?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one reason why you have that sense of, hey, I've seen this before, is sometimes you have a measure that was put on the ballot and can only be amended by another measure. And so that happens sometimes. Or if the legislature wants to amend the Constitution, they have to have the voters approve that. So they'll put constitutional amendments on the ballot. Or if the legislature wants to pass a bond act, they need to get the voters to approve that. So there are ways that our constitution in California is structured that require the legislature to go to voters, or that prior initiatives that have been passed require going back. But you also have cases where there are groups that have put the same measure on the ballot multiple times, and there's nothing to prevent that. We've had the dialysis measure on the ballot numerous times. And so, as cynical as you think people might be about the legislature and their political leaders, when the legislature puts something on the ballot, 2 out of 3 times on average, it's approved by the voters. But when an initiative is put on the ballot through petition signatures, only on average, 1 out of 3 of those pass. And voters, I think, set a higher bar for initiatives because they realize this isn't a public opinion poll. This is lawmaking. And the good news is there's 2 books that voters get. One is from the Secretary of State. The other is from your county election office. And it's confusing that there's 2. People are like, why can't they just send me 1 book? And I won't waste our time explaining the logistical challenges of trying to make that happen. But voters need to keep an eye out for their ballot arriving in the mail, their state voter information guide from the Secretary of State, Dr. Shirley Weber, and their county voter information guide from their county elections office. That's the core of what you need to make informed decisions. And if you go through the state guide, you can find the analysis written by the state legislative analyst office, an impartial, nonpartisan, highly respected state agency that will provide the historical context for you about how this measure came to be, what impact it has. It's just like if you were reading a bill analysis, because that's what we're doing, right? We're making laws. So just as the legislature has staff people who write analyses about their bills that they consider, our state legislative analyst writes analyses for us to use to make decisions on how we want to vote on ballot measures.
You mentioned that state lawmakers can create propositions, but they're also lawmakers. So why do they need to go to the ballot sometimes instead of just democratically voting on a new law?
Typically have to go to the ballot because they want to amend the Constitution, or they want to amend a prior initiative that the language of which requires that they go back to the ballot. Yeah. Or sometimes they want to punt and have the voters choose. And that's not really supported by the courts. I mean, there have been challenges to that approach. But sometimes at the local measure, you'll have a controversial issue that, you know, the city council or the board of supervisors can't come to a decision about. And they will take that to their voters and say, you know what, let's leave it up for the voters to decide. You know, it is a way of punting hard decisions to the voters, but it's also a way of giving your constituents a chance to weigh in on challenging decisions. And I think that as long as that's, you know, used in a balanced and judicious way, it's not a bad way to go.
Is a proposition and a measure essentially the same thing?
Yeah, I mean, anything that's on the ballot that's not an electoral contest or a retention contest for a judge is a measure. It's a ballot measure. We only call propositions that are the statewide measures generally, but voters will have a combination of state measures on the ballot and local measures on the ballot. And all of those can come either from the governing body, you know, the legislature or Board of Supervisors or City Council, or they can come directly through initiative petitions.
Mindy, you know, oftentimes when people are voting on a measure, bonds can be attached to it. Bonds, of course, involve money, but it's a little more complicated than that. What would you like voters to know about when they have to make a decision on whether to approve a bond?
And of course, we have a number of bonds right now that are propositions, right? So bonds are a loan, and people always want to know, like, what is this going to cost me as an individual? So as the state borrows money for this particular bond, right, if people approve it, that needs to be repaid over a certain period of time. And I think typically there are resources often online that you can kind of get a rough calculation of, like, per person, what the cost of that bond would be over a 30-year period, for instance. What I think is often not discussed around bonds is it can impact the amount of money that the legislature has in any given year in terms of what they spend on everything else. So typically bonds, at least good practice, are for kind of big projects, right? Like an infusion into money for particular school projects, for instance. It shouldn't be, many would argue, for everyday maintenance of the budget. But when the state has to pay back those bonds, right, with yearly increments, that means that there's a proportion of the budget that is restricted for those payments. And so, you know, there it can impact potentially the distribution or the availability of other money beyond just whether we want to repay this debt. And then I think for most voters, people wonder or are concerned if it's a tax, but also that it's really about the legitimacy of what it's going to be spent on and whether people believe that's a viable, important project or topic that they care about.
But could a bond lead to increased taxes since it doesn't exist in a vacuum? I'm just thinking if I was like an individual and I took a loan out, that's going to affect me down the line, you know, the ability to pay it back depending on the economic situation of.
And that's one reason why, you know, the legislature, legislative leaders sometimes will oppose initiative bond acts. I think it's really important for voters to look at the pro-con arguments in the voter guide and see who signed those arguments to help them decide, is this the right thing to do? Because you're right, these bond acts don't exist in a vacuum. They're part of our entire state budget. And while I don't believe there could be a bond act that would trigger a new tax payment, you're right that in the big scheme of things, if we get into, you know, even more debt and need to pay off those loans, as Mindy said, you know, it could cause an increase in taxes somewhere else down the line. Hmm.
You're making decisions based on your present financial situation, and there's a lot of unknowns what things could look like in the years to come and how it could impact you. We only have a few minutes left. There's a lot of acronyms out there, and acronyms can be really, really tough if you don't, like, walk in elections. I mean, I looked at some of them. I mean, there's dozens out there. For example, I know ED is obviously Election Day. VBM is Vote by Mail. Are there other acronyms that voters should be aware of?
I think the one we use the most in California is the VCA, which stands for the Voters' Choice Act. And this is a voting model that was first implemented in a handful of counties in 2018. Now it's in place in more than half the counties. About 80% of the voters in the state live in a VCA or Voters' Choice Act county. And that's important because those voters have a different voting experience than people voting in traditional polling place counties. If you're in a VCA county, which Sacramento County is a VCA county, Placer County, Yolo County, a lot of counties in our area are VCA counties, but not all of them. Sutter is not, Yuba is not, Colusa. So a lot of the smaller rural counties have not adopted the VCA. And it changes the voter's experience. In a county that has the Voters' Choice Act or VCA, you can vote at a vote center starting 10 days before Election Day, and you have drop boxes all throughout your county. If you're in a traditional polling place county, you're assigned to a local polling place in your neighborhood, and it might be within walking distance to your house, but it's only open for Election Day. So there are still early voting opportunities for all voters. Any voter in the state can go to their county election office during business hours and vote early in person if they want to. Of course, everybody gets a vote by mail ballot in the mail. That wasn't the case when the Voters' Choice Act was implemented, but it is now. So that happens for all voters. And every county has drop boxes, not necessarily as many drop boxes in non-VCA counties as in a VCA county like Sacramento. But wherever you're voting in California, you have the opportunity to return your ballot to a secure drop box at your county elections office or perhaps inside a supermarket. No matter where they are in the state, whether it's a VCA county or not, they all operate under state law and state regulation that governs the security of those drop boxes.
Mindy, do you have any final advice if a voter just feels overwhelmed and doesn't feel like they have the bandwidth to read up on everything?
Yeah, I mean, Kim did a great job walking us through the official sources, right? The voter guide, for instance, right, from the Secretary of State's office. But for a lot of people, they still sometimes don't know what to make. And if you use shortcuts for voting, which almost everybody does, period, when it comes to candidates, you know, people will use shortcuts for propositions. And so go to the, whether it's a League of Women Voters, ACLU, other organizations that have or haven't taken actual positions, but many will have voter guides. And if you trust those organizations, I'm not saying you should follow those exactly, right, or blindly, but you can get more information that you might feel makes a difference for you.
And Kim, if someone's going down those down ballot races, you talked about Board of Equalization, school board, judges, it can be kind of hard to figure out which candidate to vote for. What kind of resources are available for these down ballot races?
There are some sites that you can look up your voter guide online that we link to on our voter guide at calvoter.org. So that can help you with some of the down ballot races. I also always like to emphasize that voting is not a test, that if you're not sure how you want to vote on something, you can skip that contest. Your ballot will still be counted. You will still be a voter, even if you don't fill out every choice. But I also want to urge your listeners to think about setting up an election party, have a ballot party with your friends and family. We've done this in our household. You can do it on Zoom or you can do it in person. It can really help you come to some confident decisions. Even if you have people who you don't agree with, that can be a great cue. As Mindy was talking about a shortcut, you can use that as a shortcut to help you make your choices too. So follow the money, look for endorsements, look for who signed the ballot pamphlet arguments. Those are some of the shortcuts I rely on, and ask your friends to help.
And Kim is also well known, I have to say this, Kim, I'm sorry, but for doing ballot proposition songs.
Really?
Yes, she is.
We'll see if we're going to have one. We'll see.
I know. I'm hesitating because I haven't heard one this year, but by popular demand, she's usually coaxed into it every election cycle. It's a very memorable song that helps you remember literally what's on the ballot in terms of proposition.
Maybe you'll be a musical guest on Insight, Kim.
We'll see. We'll see what we can come up with. But thank you, Mindy, for the encouragement.
Yeah, thank you both for joining us. It was very much needed. Selfishly, I thank you both. And I think a lot of voters will appreciate the conversation. Thank you for taking the time.
Thank you, Vicky.
Thank you.
That was Insight host Vicky Gonzalez speaking with Kim Alexander from the California Voter Foundation and Mindy Romero with the USC Center for Inclusive Democracy for an Election Literacy 101 ahead of the general election. And here are some key dates to keep in mind. Counties must begin mailing vote-by-mail ballots to all registered voters on October 7th, which is also the first day of early voting. The last day to register to vote and still receive a mail-in ballot is October 21st. But if you miss that deadline, you can still vote. From October 22nd through November 5th, which is Election Day, you can vote by going to a voting site or a county election office and using conditional same-day voter registration. You're listening to Insight here on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Alan Young. We're back in just a moment.